Hello and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU provides each of our listeners with current information on a wide variety of topics related to health, athletic performance, fitness, and nutrition. On track one, Corey will provide his commentary adapted from the Certified Sports Nutrition Advisor Education Program, current research data, and his clinical experience. On track two, he will be joined by Tracy Hawley on He Said, She Said, for her female focus on topics related to whole food, health, relationships, and raising healthy children. Track three features an interview with our special guest, who will share their expertise and experience in the healthcare, fitness, and sports nutrition field. Here is Corey Hawley and this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, June 2005. Last month, I completed my discussion on the chemistry of insulin. It really is an incredibly important hormone because it manages so much of our health. Remember, if we want to prevent health risks like excess body fat, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, or high triglycerides, we've got to concentrate on doing whatever it takes to prevent insulin resistance. Consuming excess amounts of refined high glycemic carbohydrates causes blood glucose to rise quickly in the blood, and in response, the pancreas releases more and more insulin. Eventually, the receptors spread throughout the body, become saturated and non-responsive. In 1988, an endocrinologist named Gerald Reaven coined the term Syndrome X. Syndrome X is a paradigm of aging prematurely. It zaps our energy, dulls our mental focus, and darkens our mental outlook on life. Excess insulin and insulin resistance turns on the body's sympathetic nervous system, the part of the body's nervous system that speeds up the heart rate and raises blood pressure. Insulin can also increase the secretion of cortisol, the stress hormone that constricts blood vessels and increases risk of heart disease when it remains elevated for long periods. On this month's clinical review, I'd like to spend some time talking about glycemic index, glycemic load, and carbohydrate density. These terms are becoming better known to athletes who study and read the literature, but there are still millions of people out there who have no idea what these terms mean or why it's important to even understand their significance. Comprehension of the glycemic response of food is just as important as knowing its micronutrient content, allergenicity, caloric value, fiber content, or pH. Successful body composition management relies on this knowledge, and for athletes, it's crucial to performance. For example, a low glycemic food consumed 1 to 2 hours before running a marathon will provide the legs with a slow-burning source of fuel for more endurance. In contrast, a high glycemic food taken right after a morning workout can restore muscle glycogen quickly in time for an afternoon soccer game. The glycemic index, or GI, of carbohydrates was developed originally for diabetics, as knowing the effect of food on blood sugar is important for monitoring a diabetic's glucose levels. Foods that lead to a slow increase in blood glucose have a low glycemic index. Those that induce a rapid rise in blood sugar have a high glycemic index. The higher your blood sugar is after eating a certain food, the higher the glycemic index, the rating of that food. We'll call it a high or a low glycemic index. Glycemic index measures the extent to which blood glucose increases after eating a 50-gram portion of carbohydrate. This increase is then compared to glucose, which is given the value of, say, 100. After an overnight fast, a test food providing 50 grams of carbohydrate is consumed. Then on the result sheet, the incremental area under the blood glucose curve created by the test food is measured and compared to the area under the blood glucose curve affected by the reference food, which in this case is 50 grams of pure glucose. Glucose has a GI of about 100. So that's used as a standard to compare other foods to. How does it compare to glucose? Understanding the glycemic index of different fruits, vegetables, and starchy foods is important because a rapid rise in insulin, except after a workout, can ruin your body fat-reducing objectives, increase serum cholesterol levels, encourage the onset of fatigue, intensify joint inflammation, and set you up for hyperinsulinemia. Athletes need blood sugar stability. In fact, we all do. Carrots, white potatoes, ripe bananas, white bread, rice cakes, and white rice can cause a rapid rise and fall in blood sugar. These foods should be avoided before you work out. Pre-workout meals should consist of foods that have a low to medium glycemic index, such as slow-cooked oats, green apples, cherries, and plums, or a yam combined with a protein. The slow rate of digestion will help maintain a steady stream of glucose throughout your workout, especially towards the end of your exercise session when muscle glycogen tends to run out. As it goes down, your energy level tends to wane also. Fruits that have had more time to ripen are sweeter due to conversion of sugar polymers to simple forms inside their tissues to a simple sugar like, say, glucose. This raises the GI of the plant, which would be otherwise lower, provided the fruit was eaten in a starchier, less ripened state. So fruit that's less ripe usually has a lower glycemic index. Good examples of foods that can change as they ripen are bananas, pears, plums, peaches, kiwis, papayas, and mangoes. These foods have relatively low to medium glycemic indexes, but as they sweeten up, the glycemic index can increase. Low GI foods have been proven to extend endurance when eaten alone, say a couple of hours before prolonged exercise, especially when it's strenuous. In a study reported in the International Journal of Sports Nutrition, cyclists who ate lentils as a pre-event meal were able to cycle at 65% of their maximum 20 minutes longer compared to cyclists on a pre-event meal of regular white potatoes. Cyclists on the lentils had higher levels of blood sugar and insulin after 90 minutes of exercise. This demonstrates that the carbohydrate sugars were still being absorbed. You can reduce the glycemic response of food by combining it with an essential fat or a high-quality protein, both of which typically are low on the glycemic index scale. This is one of the reasons why I like to add about 50 grams of a high-quality whey protein isolate with 2 tablespoons of my sport oil into a blender, mix it with freshly squeezed grapefruit juice, whip that up and take that into my body a couple of hours before training, and that gives me the kind of energy that I'm looking for in my workout experience. Whole grapefruits have a glycemic index of about 25, so they're low. The juice, and this is something to consider also, when you juice something, the glycemic index tends to rise. So the fresh grapefruit juice, that is, about 38 on the scale. Fiber also lowers the GI of food, but this depends on the form of fiber. Soluble fiber, which is thick and viscous and found in oats, legumes, and psyllium, slows digestion and generally slows down and modifies the release of sugar into the blood, whereas finely ground insoluble fiber, like the type found in flour, often doesn't. This is why there isn't much difference in the GI between white and wholemeal flour or between whole wheat pasta and white flour pasta, although differences in their micronutrient density and nutrition value are significant. So just because you know the glycemic index doesn't mean that that food is going to be good. It can be refined and processed and still have a low glycemic index or a high as well. Fresh lemon juice and red wine vinegar are also both known to modify glycemic index when added to food in the form of a salad dressing. Dipping raw vegetables in lemon juice and extra virgin olive oil has a similar effect. The acidity of lemon juice and red wine vinegar slows stomach emptying, which increases the time food takes to leave the gut. Slow release of food from the gut means longer digestion time and less insulin spiking. The natural carbohydrate sugars in sourdough bread are also modified by the action of lactic acid or propionic acid. These are the acids that are working inside that sourdough dough. Whole grain sourdough is a better choice for extending endurance and stamina than non-sourdough bread. It takes longer for the sourdough to digest in the system and absorb, and it's generally more satisfying. After a cycle or workout in the gym, when your metabolic window is wide open and glycogen stores are depleted, indulge yourself with a delicious smoothie blended with carbs and protein. Mix 50 to 100 grams of high glycemic carbs with up to 25% of your total daily requirement of high quality protein. This is also a great time to add some creatine, ribose, glutamine, and calcium ascorbate. This approach will encourage glycogen restoration much faster than eating steak and eggs or a tuna salad sandwich. It will promote quick recovery, suppress cortisol activity, and enhance the metabolic function of insulin, IGF-1, testosterone, and human growth hormone. Sports research scientists at the Australian Institute of Sport in Canberra showed that high GI foods definitely result in faster replenishment of glycogen back into fatigued muscles. High glycemic carbs taken immediately after training also restores hepatic glycogen required to fuel and protect the liver. Here's a tip for those who like to consume alcohol after playing rugby or soccer or any sport for that matter. Alcohol interferes with glycogen resynthesis and lowers blood glucose levels. Try not to drink every day. If you do, you'll never get your glycogen levels up high inside the muscle, so your energy will never quite reach its peak potential. So you've got to go days on end sometimes without touching alcohol and maybe introduce it every once in a while. But just remember that alcohol ingestion interferes with glycogen restoration. And it's all a matter of timing, balance, and control. In addition to glycemic indexing, it's possible to predict what impact carbs will have on the body and what effect a specific carb load will have on your blood sugar before consuming it. This knowledge can help you select the right food so that you can time the effect according to your performance and recovery needs. Regardless of the food or the amount eaten, you can get a clear picture in advance by knowing both its glycemic index and glycemic load. Wholemeal pasta, for example, has a moderate glycemic index of 45, but it is very carb dense, so the glycemic load or carb impact is relatively high compared to an equal portion of cucumber or squash. In these two latter examples, most of the weight in grams when weighed on a scale is water, whereas most of the weight of pasta is carbohydrate. So that's why the carbohydrate density is higher. There's less water, therefore more room for sugar molecules. The glycemic load of a food is calculated by multiplying its glycemic index by its digestible carbohydrate content in grams and then dividing by 100. Indigestible fiber doesn't count. In scientific terminology, each unit of the glycemic load represents the equivalent blood glucose-raising effect of 1 gram of pure glucose or white bread. How foods are rated on the scale of glycemic index, by the way, varies a bit depending on which text you use. I classify foods with a GI of 40 or less as low, 40 to 60 as medium, and anything above 60 is high. Let's say we want to measure the glycemic load of a golden delicious apple. First, we need to know the glycemic index of that particular kind of apple, which is 40 in this case. Then, based on the weight or portion size you're going to eat, which in this case is 120 grams as an estimate, we need to know how many grams of digestible carbs that amount of apple actually contains. And the answer in this case is 20 grams. So that size of an apple contains 20 grams of digestible carbohydrates. So we need to know that. So to calculate the glycemic load of a golden delicious apple, you multiply the GI, which is 40, by its carbohydrate density or digestible carbs, which is 20. 40 times 20 is 800. We divide by 100. The net product is 8. So the glycemic load of the apple is 8. Glycemic load, like the glycemic index, also has a scale. Low is 10 or less, medium is 11 to 19, and 20 or higher is considered high. Another aspect of glycemic indexing or glycemic value relates to knowing how to predict what effect an entire meal or mix of foods eaten together at one time will have on your blood sugar. To calculate the predicted GI outcome of an entire meal, you must first know both the carbohydrate content of each individual food in the meal plus the total carbohydrate content of the entire meal. Now let's talk about carbohydrate density. The carbohydrate density of a food refers to the digestible carbohydrates present in any given food. This is calculated by subtracting the fiber portion, which is indigestible, from the total carbohydrate content. Natural carbohydrate-dense foods such as potatoes, oatmeal, whole grains, whole wheat flour, beans, starchy vegetables like yams and squash, and many fruits are low in water volume and therefore high in sugar. These foods score high on the carbohydrate density scale, whereas kale, green beans, tomatoes, and peaches score low. 100 grams of broccoli, for instance, contains 25 calories, whereas 100 grams of white or whole grain flour contains 400 calories. Broccoli is mostly water, whereas flour is mostly sugar or carbohydrates, but they are both high carbohydrate foods. So the water content really makes a big difference in terms of the determination of the carbohydrate density. You know that if it's high in water, it's going to be relatively low in carbohydrate density. Every plant on this earth consists mainly of carbs, and in some cases, high amount of fat, like olives or avocados, are very high in fat, for example, and lower in carbohydrate, but they're plants. Although lentils and legumes have a reputation for a higher than average protein content, which is in the range of about 18 to 22%, the vast majority of their calories comes from carbs, not protein. So they are not high protein foods. The biological value of all plants is also relatively low, low meaning less than 75. The only true high protein foods in nature are low fat wild tissue proteins such as venison, moose, caribou, and most fish. To qualify as a high protein food, the majority of calories present in the food must be derived from protein. Commercial red meats are actually high fat foods because domesticated animals are typically fed grains instead of green grass and lack sufficient physical activity. So the amount of fat in commercial red meat, for example, is very, very high. It can be high as 50, 60, 70%. The amount of insulin your body produces after eating food depends on the density of carbohydrates present and the glycemic index of that food. The more carbs you eat, the more insulin your body will produce. So even though naturally occurring starchy vegetables and whole grains are more nutritious than refined carbohydrates, such as pasta, white bread, and potato chips, they can still cause blood sugar and insulin to elevate beyond acceptable levels if you eat more than you require, especially at one sitting. So you still have to manage your carbohydrate intake. And unless you are lean or extremely active, or both, eating a lot of starchy foods can get you fat, keep you fat, or encourage the onset of Syndrome X. If you can't let go of the most common starchy staples, such as bread, bagels, muffins, or pasta, the best time to consume them is post-workout, earlier on in the day. The worst time is in the evening when you're generally less active and when insulin levels are lower and less sensitive. Well, that's it for this segment of SNU. Thanks for listening, and here's a quote from Ann Landers. What the vast majority of American children need is to stop being pampered, stop being indulged, stop being chauffeured, stop being catered to. In the final analysis, it is not what you do for your children, but what you have taught them to do for themselves that will make them successful human beings.